We're talking Teletubbies, Tinky Winky, Dipsy,
to yet another episode of Mango's Void. Today we're talking about family because someone asked in our last episode for me to talk about how to deal with family. And, you know, we thought instead of answering with a very long response on Patreon because there's a lot to be said, we thought why not just do a whole episode, you know? About how to deal with family. And I think that family is a very interesting topic to discuss because, you know, I'm someone that is relatively close with my family. Like, I have a very close-knit family. We're all friends. You know?
Sorry. Continue. You're a slut for your family.
No, I
you niggas are all sluts for each other.
Listen,
you can't get enough of each other.
Listen, my we're insane. We'll die for we'll take bullets for each other. And even with that, you know?
Yeah.
It's still difficult, you know? So I wanted to talk about that because I also think it's cultural. You know, I'm South African. We're sluts for our families. This is a family-centric culture. And even within a South African context, like, my family's really close. But it's interesting because Americans are not like that, you know?
Yeah.
The American relationship with family is, like, the complete opposite of the South African.
Did you know 1 in 4 Americans don't even speak to their families?
Wow.
25% of this country is completely estranged from their family.
What are the reasons?
The number one cited reasons are emotional abuse, clashing of values, mismatched expectations, and physical and sexual abuse, you know? But it's crazy how much of an epidemic this is without anyone really even talking about it.
Yeah.
We talk about social media, we talk about anorexia, we talk about all these things that also have such a sizable amount of the population suffering from them, but 1 in 4 people just don't even talk to their families at all, and no one talks about it.
Wow.
No one talks about this as an epidemic that is literally killing people.
Wow.
But yeah, sorry, continue.
No, it's interesting because not only are 1 in 4 Americans estranged from their family, there's also a sizable amount of people globally that are rejecting the entire construct of family entirely. You know, there's...
You're talking about the dinks. You're talking about
the dinks, aren't you?
Call them out by name. call out that community.
Dinks. There's no phrase I hate more. There's no community. And it's because I'm part of that community.
No. Hey. We're dinkwad. We're dinkwad. We at least accept some accountability, even if just for a shih tzu. And I think that makes you a slightly more respectable human being.
We're going to talk about
this. I think so. Like, our lives aren't entirely about ourselves.
Right.
You know, instead of just going to Chili's and getting margaritas, maybe we'll get mango surgery or something.
Yeah,
you know, we live for something other than ourselves.
Yeah.
Which I think is kind of important. But anyway, continue.
No, I mean, we are one of the first generations to ever exist in the history of humankind that is blatantly rejecting the idea of starting families. So not only are families disintegrating from the inside, there's also less and less of them beginning. In South Korea, women are on strike. They've said, bitch, not in these conditions. Children, not in these conditions, not in these material conditions, not in these cultural conditions, but especially not in these economic conditions. And that's very interesting because
they're putting the pussy on the picket line.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm one of those people that have put my pussy on the picket line. You know, it's funny. Yesterday, I was actually Googling how much would it cost me to just take out my uterus. Let's just take the whole, let's just take the whole apparatus out. Let's take it out. The whole apparatus. Let's take the pussy out. Let's take the uterus out. Let's take the eggs
out. Shut down the whole operation.
Just take the womb out. Let's just take it all out. And that's where I'm at with kids, you know? Because I'm also looking around and I'm like, in these conditions, no. You know, it's interesting. Yesterday, I was in this economics class because I'm just back to school now. I'm just, you know, I've just gone back to school. So I'm taking this economics class and we were talking about the role of family in the economy. And some interesting statistics came up. The vast majority of businesses in any economy is family businesses. And this is not just SMEs, which are small to middle-sized enterprises. This is also like your Walmarts, you know?
Yeah.
Your Toyotas.
Yeah, the Walton family, Toyota family. Yeah, these are all family businesses.
The entire economic system, the global economic engine is run by families.
Yeah. In, the U.S. Federal Reserve is controlled by 16 families.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
In Germany alone, 90% of businesses in Germany are family businesses, right?
Yeah.
So that's one statistic. Then there's another statistic, which is quite frankly a feminist issue, which I also think is contributing greatly to the breakdown of families. Did you know that 63.1% of the UK's GDP is unpaid invisible domestic labor within households? So 63.1% of the entire gross domestic product of the British Empire is the labor of women in the house, the invisible labor of women in the house, right? In Ghana, it's actually 74%. You know?
Yeah, that rings very true.
You know, obviously these are very specific statistics, but the trends are global. You know, I don't have the numbers for every single country, but the trends are global. In 2016, the value of the UK's unpaid household service work is estimated at £1.24 trillion. So family, just the labor of fat, and a trillion, guys, trillion. And this was in 2016. Okay, I don't have the stats for 2024, but in 2016, £1.24 trillion of labor of value was generated by women in the household. So the value of family, okay, within just an economic context is astronomical. There is no economy without family. There is no economy without the invisible labor of women. And that trickles down to the invisible labor of women in the global south. And I think what's happening in South Korea, in the West generally, and I think this is going to be global. I think what's happening is, even though we don't know the numbers as women, you know, not everyone is an economist, not everyone studies the economy, not everyone knows the numbers, but as women, we can feel that we contribute £1.2 trillion to the economy by being, I don't even know what to call it,
baby-making machine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that there is a subconscious knowing and understanding of this fact, and women are rejecting that. And I think a large reason for dinks and the the pussy strike in Korea and anywhere else in the world, I think there's just this like subconscious understanding of the extent to which being a curator and organizer of family is just a very insidious form of slavery. And I think the collective feminine understanding of that has led to the collapse of families overall.
Yeah.
And I don't just mean like bringing sentient life into the world. I also mean marriage, because we need to also talk about marriage. And the way in which marriage is sort of like the purveyor of family. It's the ultimate signifier of family, you know? And I think that there's a lot of people also just rejecting that. And I think it's interesting that we're rejecting parenting. We're rejecting marriage. We're rejecting monogamy. And this is a rejection by and large of the construct of family, right?
Yeah.
What do you think is happening with marriage?
I know for me personally, when it comes to marriage and family, when I really dig into myself and I'm completely honest, my resent towards capitalism and just a lot of things about modern life came from watching it rip my family away from me. It came from watching my parents work so much that they didn't have time to raise me, and I was very neglected. And a lot of my like current worldview and the current things that I hate, like capitalism, and the current things that I fundamentally take issue with about modern life are from my own trauma dealing with family.
Right.
You know what I mean? I remember as a young kid taking the train to school, watching all of these Caribbean women raising these white babies. This is a practice all around the world where Black women are ripped out of their homes to go raise these white children.
Wow.
And meanwhile, who the fuck do you think raising their children?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then their children end up like me, neglected, trying to be famous because they didn't get any attention as a child. And when you realize how much attention children need endless attention. Like you always say, they're narcissists. They don't know any better. They need to be endlessly coddled. But your mom wakes up at 5 a.m. every morning to take the train to the Upper West Side to nurse some fucking rich, uppity white kid, you know? And my own personal relationship with my own family and the extent to which they were exploited and ripped away from the home has shaped my entire worldview. I don't know if I'm this very, very rigid anti-capitalist if I didn't have that formative familial experience.
Right.
And you can tell family is in a very weird place. I was sitting in Central Park the other day and there's this seemingly like well-off white couple and they've adopted this Asian baby.
Oh my God. And
they bring the baby to the park to leave it with their Trinidadian nanny while they go off to some meeting. They seemed very, very busy. They were on their phone. They were talking about their portfolios or something. So they then leave their adopted baby with this Trinidadian caretaker.
Yeah.
And they go off. And now I'm just looking at the Asian baby with the Trinidadian caretaker. And I could tell there was just this energy of, can we just both go be with our real family?
Listen.
But it was that instance was just such like an interesting example of the modern world we've created. We've got this white couple who's adopted an Asian baby who's just left them with a Trinidadian. And it's like, how far from God's light have we strayed?
Very far.
And I'm not trying to say that adoption is bad. That is not what you should take from the story. It's just like, look at this absurd thing that we've created where like none of us are raising our own kids. We're exploiting the labor of like Black women, usually from the global South, to raise our kids because we don't want to raise them. But yet we swear we love being parents and we don't regret it.
And we value and like, it's, family.
There's so much dissonance. And there's so much lying. And I think that we do need to have this collective era where we're just completely honest about what we want out of life. Because this contract of family fundamentally runs on a debt model. In the same way, like, we're born into debt generally in the economy. You're forced to take on student loan debt. Then you need shelter. So then you got to get a mortgage. And then, oh, fuck, your gallbladder broke. Now you're in medical debt. And just the process of being alive and being born into this world leaves you in financial debt. I also feel like family represents this spiritual debt where it's like, because I was just born into, let's say, like an Asian or African family, I now have to be academically successful. I have to give my family a male heir. I have to be straight. I have to be financially successful.
Right.
And it operates like debt. And we end up doing things, much like with debt, that we don't want to do because we just feel this pressure on us. And I think that for a lot of reasons, some of it is the internet, some of it is just other consequences of late stage capitalism. But our generation, we're particularly bad at communicating. We're particularly bad at setting boundaries.
Yeah.
And we're particularly bad at standing up for ourselves. And the only way to get out of this spiritual debt that family leaves you in is to like renegotiate the fundamental contract, which requires confrontation. But it is extremely hard to be confrontational and be honest and confront your family. They are gods to you.
Right. Yeah.
There's that quote, like, mother is God to the lips of a child. You know what I mean? And in order to break free of what people call, like, generational trauma, requires something that is difficult in a way that is larger than life. You know, like, confronting your parents, dealing with your parents, being honest with them, setting boundaries with them. It is not the same as setting boundaries with a friend or setting boundaries with a... It carries an entirely different weight. And because we don't want to deal with that weight, we don't want to grasp how actually difficult that is, we get the just leave them, cut them off, go no contact type advice. Because that's actually far easier than the real, real, very, very difficult and messy work that needs to be done. But the reason why I think that just cut your family off entirely advice is so harmful is because family is such a biological and spiritual connection that even if you have to end up cutting them off, if you're not able to say that I tried my best, if you're not able to say that you really explored every single option of fixing that relationship, it will haunt you.
I
think that this is a facet of life that modern psychology is really, really failing people in. I think
absolutely.
That we're gleefully following this advice of just cut people off, set your boundaries, don't budge on them, because we're actually scared of the real work.
And
because we're scared of the truth that the looming voice of your parents in your own head will haunt you. I mean, a lot of the way that we narrate, a lot of that inner voice in our heads are our parents. You can cut them off.
Yeah.
You can never speak to your dad again. You can never speak to your mom again. But until you find that closure in that, if that is your choice, which is a completely respectable choice, by the way, to cut them off, there will always be this lingering sadness, this lingering trauma that cannot be resolved. And yeah, I just think modern therapy is really failing people in this regard.
No, I completely agree. Yeah, I think a lot of the hatred of our families in this society is actually a hatred of self. It's actually like a self-loathing that we cannot confront because it's so triggering. And I think that family is the architect of identity. All of our identities were molded by our earliest formative experiences with our families. And the ways that we perceive ourselves, the ways that we self-narrate, ways that we self-identify, were constructed by our families, for better or for worse. When, you know, your mom always told you, you're so beautiful, you're so cute, that became lodged as like a fundamental part of your identity. If your mom always told you, you're such a useless person. That becomes lodged into your identity. You know, if your mom is like, wow, you're such a helpful boy, Timmy. You're so, you know, like all of these little comments, both big and large, both banal and significant, become lodged as permanent aspects of our identity because these were our formative years. And I think that we are such a self-loathing generation. Not entirely because of our families, but because of the society we've been thrown into with social media, with celebrity, with the pressures of capitalism, with the crumbling economic system, with the ways that our governments gaslight us into believing that we are the failures because we can't afford a house and not because it's the fucking economy and inflation and COVID and war constant. You know, but like we have been thrown into a world that creates self-hate, and we project our self-hatred onto our families because our families were the architects of our identity. And of course, a lot of it is legitimate. You know, there are a lot of abusive families, there are a lot of toxic families. I get it, true. But I also think that there is a lot of projection happening, a lot of self-loathing that is being projected onto the domain a family, because we all know, whether consciously or unconsciously, that our families were the first architects of our identities. And when we wake up out of our childhoods and we become adults and we hate ourselves, we look at our family, we look at the people who were the architects of the identities that we so hate, and we're like, it was you, you know?
Yeah.
And I just don't think that's all entirely fair. I think we also, as a generation, have a lot of subconscious underlying resentment towards boomers, and our parents are boomers because they destroyed the planet. They destroyed the economy. They destroyed the planet. You know, like, and now none of us can afford a house. And like, there's a,
this is why I like hate, I hate the way that the field of psychology and therapists deal with this issue, because it's so rooted in like class warfare and like economics. Like,
yes,
we need to finally accept the deeply traumatic, and I know people hate when you use that word lightly, but I'm not, event that is being raised by the American or Western boomer. To be raised by a boomer is extremely traumatic. Boomers viewed their children as an obstacle to their own happiness and their own success, instead of an actual loving member of their families and continuation of their legacy. They viewed us as obstacles. And it's very important to note that, because when people use this term generational trauma, which I think is very harmful in how vague it is, I think what they're really describing is sadism. It's the process of someone making you feel very, very small and you needing to take that out on whoever is closest around you to feel big.
Yeah.
You know, that family member that comes to Thanksgiving and knows exactly what part of your body to comment on to make you go haywire. That is sadism. And I think that when we create these very vague, nebulous terms like generational trauma, it can stop us from kind of having a surgical, precise understanding of what is really happening. And I think that when economies start failing, you end up having to sacrifice your life entirely in order to have a child. That is every immigrant's experience in this country. They sacrifice their entire life, everything that they had in their former country, all the friends they had, the entire social network they had, their ability to speak their own language, for their children to be able to have a better life. That was the original sin. That is not a healthy thing to do. No one should ever be sacrificing their entire life for someone else.
Right.
So in a lot of ways, I do understand the deep resentment that boomers have towards their kids. And in a culture where every individual is supposed to be this success story, everyone is supposed to have this extravagant life where they achieve all their dreams. When you don't achieve those dreams, who do you think you're going to take that out on? It's your child. Boomers do not want to see their kids doing better than them. They hate it.
Interesting.
And by the way, maybe women feel this a little less, but it's especially, especially true with men. Your dad never wants to see you make more money than him.
Really?
If you start making more money than your dad, he will just start making very, very snide comments like, oh, ooh, Mr. Fancy Pants over
That's
here.
That's interesting.
It's not normal for our parents to be our biggest haters.
Yeah.
That's like, that's very indicative of like a collapsed society.
Yeah.
But we do have to understand how we got there. They ended up having to make one or two too many sacrifices to the point that they felt like they sacrificed their whole life. And now we are just this living reminder of all of their failures. But yeah, that's why I can't stress enough. We have to all sit down with our families and renegotiate a proper contract.
Yeah.
Because whatever we're doing now just cannot keep functioning.
We've talked a lot on this podcast about antinatalism and whether or not it is ethical and worthwhile to bring sentient life into this world. I want to expand on that question and inquire into the ethics of starting a family. If we're questioning whether it's worthwhile to bring a child into existence, do you think it's worthwhile to find another person, get together with them, nut in that person, bring sentient life, raise that person together? Is starting a family worthwhile? Is the concept of family outdated?
Thank you for listening to the first half of this conversation. If you're interested in listening to the rest of this conversation, you will find it on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/bobosvoid, or you can just click on the link in the description box below. patreon.com/bobosvoid, or just click on the description box below. Thank you.